We're going to look at this morning. We're still in parables. We're looking at the older brother this week. Steve, do you still have that photo? I meant to touch base with you this week. Do you still have the artist rendering thing? Okay, making sure. So we're looking at the older brother this week. Last week we looked at the younger brother. The parable for I don't know how long, I'm assuming centuries maybe, has always been called, as far as I know, when someone gave a title to it, and I don't know who agreed upon it, but somebody did somewhere, the parable of the prodigal son. But that really wasn't even the audience that Jesus was talking to, okay? He was talking to the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day. You know, I think one of the reasons why we focus in on it so much is because of all the bad stuff that the younger brother did. But there's actually two brothers in the story, and Jesus is really talking to the religious leaders. And so the second brother that he's trying to talk to is the audience that's listening in. So what I want us to do this morning is to unpack what it means to be the older brother and ask ourselves the hard question of, am I the older brother, or can I sometimes be the older brother? Why? What are the symptoms of it? And then most importantly, how do I get past when I sometimes slip into the role of becoming the older brother? All right, so let's look at this. Luke chapter 15. We are going to start in verse 11. Okay, it's on page 894 there in the Bibles in front of you. To illustrate this point further, Jesus told them this story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money on wild living. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have enough food to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father, and while he was still a long ways off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son.' But his father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for the son of mine was dead and now has returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found.' So the party began. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of the servants what was going on. 'Your brother is back,' he was told, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return.' The older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him, but he replied, 'All these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And in all that time, you never even gave me one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf?' His father said to him, 'Look, dear son, you have always stayed by me, and everything I have is yours. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found.'" While I was reading that, I was reminded that John and Colleen are here for the first time, as far as I'm aware. I was gone a couple weeks, so I'm assuming that you hadn't been here yet. And they brought their adorable little daughter back there that gave me a high five this morning. I mean, she is a smart little girl. And so she's sitting right back here in the back. Everybody can turn around. Okay, you can stare at this point, all right? And there's the little baby. Full name again. Fiona, I knew the first name. What was the middle name again? Margaret. Okay, Fiona Margaret right there is now 3 weeks? 4 weeks? 3, okay. All right, very good. Had a blowout the other day, saw that on Facebook. Congratulations. Congratulations, first one of several. So, yeah, get that one out of the way, learn how to deal with that, and life is much better. So all the parents are laughing because they're like, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that. But let's look at this parable this morning, and let's look at this story because Jesus is trying to lay out some truths here that we all need to know. Here's what I want to ask this morning. How many of you are the youngest in the family? Okay, doesn't matter how many, but you are the baby of the family. Let me see your hands. Okay, raise them up high so we can see. Oh, man, I feel your pain. I feel your pain because I'm the baby too. We got picked on. We got hand-me-downs. You know, that's not right. Something sinful about that. How many of you were the middle? I mean, whether they're, you know, you're number two or number three or 15 of 17. Okay, we got several middles. How many older? You are the oldest. Did you notice what the oldest did? The younger ones go like they're ready for the beat down again. You know, the older ones are looking around going, don't you put your hand up. The middle ones were like, I think I am. I'm not sure. Somewhere in there, my parents left me at church one time. I was raised by wolves. You know, I don't know. You know, the oldest ones were like, that's right. You know, I'm number one. You know, man, you guys, I didn't even anticipate that. And it was like, yeah, you know, we're leading the way. We got everything. We blamed it on everybody else, right? I will tell you a story about my older brother and I. We as kids loved Nerf Hoop. Any Nerf Hoop fans out there? I mean, I still love Nerf Hoop, okay? Nerf Hoop just rocks. I'm not going to play against Brooke because he's taller than the door in which you would have to hang it upon, okay? So that's not fair. I'm not sure how I would ever get it over him. Anyway, so we were playing Nerf Hoop in the garage. You know, it's a great place to play. You hang the little Nerf Hoop on one of the beams up there, okay? So we're in there playing. I'm guessing we're... he's probably seven, I'm probably five, something like that, somewhere around that time frame. I'll never forget this moment. I made the move of a lifetime in Nerf Hoop. You know what I'm talking about? You know when you fake dribble because you can't dribble the Nerf ball? You know what I'm talking about? And so, man, I gave him one of those, and he went that way, and I faked him out, and I went around kind of like LeBron did last night. And so I'm going around there, and I'm screaming towards the basket, and I'm jumping at least 2 inches off the ground, right, at the age of five, you know, where you feel like you jump 2 feet. And I go up, and I am ready to, you know, as the announcer says, throw the hammer down, okay? And I'm going up, and I'm going to do like this, and it's like it's all in slow motion. You know how when something really bad's about to happen, it's like you can't stop it, and it takes forever for what's about to happen. And I remember just feeling like I was in slow motion, and I go up to dunk it, and I feel my body becoming contorted slightly, and I'm going much faster than what I had anticipated because my brother has noticed that I am past him, but we do what every good little kid does, and that is we shove you. So now that I'm really going fast, and I'm in the air, and I remember not completing the dunk at all. It was a terrible travesty. I didn't complete the dunk. I don't even remember what happened, but I do remember hearing this incredibly loud, thunderous noise inside my cranium, which would be my head. And I remember getting up off the ground, and I couldn't really see real well. And I was like, you know, I'll never recover kind of a thing. And what it was is blood was coming down my face, and so I was having trouble seeing through all of that. He had shoved me into one of the beams on the garage door, and to this day, I have proof right up here. Now, don't meet me at the door and stare at my scar the whole time while we're talking. That makes me a little unnerved. But you can just take a quick glance when you walk by. Don't stare. It's not nice to stare. We're teaching kids around here not to stare. But it's right here, and you could probably even see it from your seat because I can feel it right here, and that's what my brother did to me. Followed by my brother begging me not to go inside and tell my parents. Sure, I'll just not go in. Hey, son, how'd you get bloody? I don't know. It just happened. All of a sudden, I'm bleeding profusely right here, you know? No big deal. my brother going, don't tell mom and dad. Really? I mean, really? There's no evidence here. And so I remember that point, and I remember always thinking, you know, my older brother, look at what he has done to me. And so he scarred me for life. So I'll tell people, you know, my older brother, he scarred me for life. And they're like, oh, that's so terrible to hear. I don't tell them that, you know, it wasn't like a counseling thing. It was just, he scarred me for life right here. But, you know, when we talk about the older brother syndrome and the things that happened in this story, you know, while I look back upon that as kind of, you know, some fun events or whatever else, there was a thing in which the older brother kind of held some cards that the middle or the younger ones didn't have. You know, there's just something about that firstborn that is really unique and really different and very special. So here's this firstborn, and he's in the story, and Jesus tells this parable about what the younger son had done, what the older son was doing in his reaction. But let's just kind of take a step back for a minute, because as we listen to the story, like, yeah, that older brother shouldn't act like that. But let's look at some of the reasons why he might act like that. Imagine if you had a sibling that wanted or demanded the estate from your parents while they were still living. Would you have a little bit of a problem with that? Would you think that's a little inappropriate? Would you think that's a lot out of bounds? I hope so. Wouldn't you have a little bit of something within you that was just like, my brother is such a loser. He would go to the extent of basically wishing my dad was dead, because that's really what he was saying to him. You didn't ever transfer the estate while you were living. That happened after someone died. And he had the audacity to go to my dad and say, Dad, look, you're taking a long time to die here. I want my money now. That's a pretty audacious statement. So the older brother is kind of coming from the perspective of good riddance. I'm glad he's gone. I don't have to hear anymore about how much dad is a loser, mom and dad this, mom and dad that. If I just had all my money, I would go do this. Well, good, he's gone. Second thing, just imagine if you had a sibling that broke your parents' heart and you watched all of it. You gonna be a little upset about that? I bet you are. Imagine if you had a sibling that degraded your family name. I mean, this sin that the younger brother's in is public. It's everywhere. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows that this younger brother has done whatever he wanted to do when he wanted to do it. He's not only embarrassed your parents, he's embarrassed you. Next thing is this, what if he played the part of the fool? You know, just imagine going to work and everybody's like, well, you know, at least you're not like your younger brother. You know, I don't know about you, but we all kind of know the rule that, you know, I can talk bad about my brother, but you don't need to, right? Those of you who are married or looking to get married, okay, they may critique their in-laws. I would encourage you to be very, very careful in that trap. It's not to say that you can't go, yeah, I'm seeing the same thing, but if you begin to pile on, you better look out, okay? You better look out. You better watch out, because like I may be able to tell my frustrations, but if I feel like you're degrading my family, that's not going to sit too well, all right? What about this? What if your younger sibling or any of your siblings wasted what they had while you always did the right thing? Let's just say that you were given a good sum of money by your parents, okay? Let's just say that that happened. And one of your siblings went out and wasted it all. It's in $100, okay? This is like hundreds of thousands of dollars. But you did the right thing every day. You invested, you worked hard, you were good, you were honest, right? You did all those things, and they wasted it all. How would you feel? What about this? Imagine if your sibling, after all that, got a party for coming home. Are you really going to be excited about that party? Or do you have a lot of questions? A lot of trust has been burnt, hadn't it? We all know, man, you lose trust in a relationship, you've lost everything. You can lose a lot of things. You lose trust, you've lost a relationship. It's over at that point. Total rebuilding from that point. And so imagine if you were in that place and you're coming back in and you've been the dutiful son, you've been the dutiful daughter. You've done everything. You've mowed the lawn for your parents in their old age. You've taken care of them. You made sure that their bills were paid up. You made sure that when they got something weird over the phone or in the mail, that you intervened to make sure that nobody was taking advantage of them. And the sibling who always took advantage of them says, I'm coming home and I've been a bad person. And your parents decide to throw a big party. Are you going to be a part of the party planning committee? Or are you going to say, I don't think so? I think sometimes we can be a little bit harsh on this older brother. Just say, man, I just need to get over it. You know, look at this. This is a good day. But if you watched all of those things, and probably some of you in here in this room can give a similar story that's a real life story. And you might look at your siblings as if to say, no, I've seen too much. There's been too many hurts. I can't get past all of that. What about this? Imagine if you're the sibling. You've done all the work. You made sure mom and dad are taken care of. You've watched how your sibling has played the part of the fool and degraded the family name and everything else, and there's a party planned, but no one made you aware of it. Do you feel a little out of the loop? You feel a little taken advantage of? You feel like somebody else is loved more than you? That's why I don't want us to be too hard on this older brother to say that there's some real feelings at stake here. This is real. This isn't, oh, he ought to just get over it and forgive and move on. These are a lot of years. A lot of years that they were working in the field and doing everything that mom and dad needed them to do, and the other one's out there squandering their money, and all of a sudden they come home and there's a party already going on. And you're walking in from the hot, dry, dusty fields. You hear music and dancing, and you find out what's going on. You're going to be at least tempted to be a little upset. You're going to want to know how come somebody didn't tell you. You ever had a party within the family or something going on within the family, and you're always the last one to find out? Or you were the last one to find out? It's frustrating, isn't it? You start feeling like, well, are other people more important, or are they trying to say they don't want to hang around us? What's kind of going on here? Sometimes it's just that that's the way that the order fell and the way that people told the story or people gave the invitation, and that's the way that it came. But if it happens over and over and over and over again, you're going to have a lot of questions, aren't you? I want us to look back at that painting if we have that. We've been looking at Rembrandt's rendition. No, it's the other one. That was when he was playing the part of the prodigal. There we go. So here's Rembrandt. I think it's one of the last three paintings that he did. It was in his old age. And here is the prodigal coming home. And what everyone seems to agree on is that everyone seems to agree on that the person to the right standing up is the older brother. Okay? And the way that Rembrandt kind of painted this, instead of staying true to the biblical text of showing the father running out, he stayed true to the spirit of the text. Okay, in other words, this is, you know, the father and the prodigal meeting and beginning to get ready. You can't really see it because the video projector isn't the best with this, but in the background, there's actually a flute player, okay, back there holding a flute. So the party is beginning. This is the music and dancing kind of thing. And on the right here is the older brother. And if you notice the difference in the demeanor, you know, the older brother stands apart, okay. All the light that is in the picture emanates from the father, not from anyone else, okay? There's light on the older son's face, but it's not light coming from him. There's light upon the prodigal, but that light's not coming from him. All of the light comes from the father. And so as we look at the comparison and contrast of these two guys, what we have to come to grips with is this. Salacious sin is just as grievous to God as those who stick around and are dutiful and wonderful and going to go the extra mile and loyal, but it turns into self-righteousness. Salacious sin and self-righteous sin are just as deadly. We've talked about this before. Comparison in life leads to one of two things. Comparison in life leads to one of two things, envy or pride. Can you sense it in what the older brother said? What did he say to the dad? All these years I've slaved for you. I've worked for you. The Greek says slaved. Can you imagine God the Father hearing that? Son, you've seen this whole thing as slavery? You've missed the point. In other words, look at what all I've done. Look at how hard I've worked. Look at me. So there's this comparison of, and you heard it, he goes, not one single time did you throw me a party. And God says, everything I have is yours. In other words, you're just as much in a distant land, son, as what your younger brother is, because the way you view me is incorrect. We talked about last week that A.W. Tozer said, as it relates to us as people and as persons, the most important thing about us is the way we view God. So if you view God as the prodigal of just give me my stuff, I want to go do whatever I want to go do, and I don't have to listen to you, then guess what? You're going to become that younger son. But if you view God as the older brother did, as you owe me, look at all that I've done, look at how much I've slaved for you, look at how much I've worked for you, what that does is that defines who God is in your mind, and yet both definitions are wrong. The prodigal, the younger son, his definition was wrong. The older brother, I'm going to be dutiful and honest. And, you know, see, here's what happens in most churches. We like it when the prodigal comes home. I mean, we really do. Most churches, they like that story. But the problem is most people in our churches have a tendency to lean towards becoming the older brother. Let me give you a for instance. You ever prayed long and hard about something, whether it was a job or relationship or whatever else? And someone who's just kind of coming back to Christ or hasn't really been that close to Christ gets a huge answer to prayer? You don't happen to feel a little envious, do you? Maybe you even feel like God is distant or he's not listening. Or why isn't he listening? I've done all this stuff for him. You see how the older brother comes out? See, what happens is this. It's easy to point out the prodigal, isn't it? Isn't it easy to define that sin? It's easy to point it out. See, it's easy for pastors to stand up and preach about certain sins because they're so obvious. But the power of pride and the power of self-righteousness doesn't easily come out, and it's not easily seen. It's inside and it's subtle. But just as soon as something good happens to someone else, do you ever catch yourself going, well, they're not that great? Whoa, where did that come from? Let a circumstance happen in your life that you didn't know was coming. All of a sudden it surprises you and you make a comment or you make a statement out of pride. You make a statement out of self-righteousness. Well, at least I've never done that. Or what about this one? Well, I'd never do that. You better look out. You better watch out. Because these are the traps that are in our lives. And so what I've found in my own life is this. As soon as I've realized I've become a prodigal and I come back to the Father, if I'm not real careful, I'll transition to becoming the older brother very, very quickly. Well, at least I came back. At least I repented. At least I. And it becomes all about me. See, Rembrandt is correct in painting the light coming through the Father, because he's the only one who has perfect love. The younger brother did not, but neither did the older brother. See, what I want us all to understand is this, and Jesus was aiming this parable at the religious rulers, so this last part is for them. And what he's saying is this, the Father loves the prodigal as much as he loves the older brother, but he's not going to tolerate this kind of behavior. He loves them both equally. He loves the younger brother. So for him to run out there, notice what happened. Who left the party inside to go out and check on the older brother? The dad did. During the music and the dancing and eating and everything else, he notices, hey, where's my oldest son? And they're like, man, he's outside. He's mad. Father didn't say, well, he can get over it. He needs to just suck it up, put his big boy pants on, come on inside, right? You know, he didn't say that. What did he do? Father goes out and says, hey, how come you're not here, man? Your younger brother was lost. Now he's found, man. He was dead and he's alive. We got to celebrate this. And he's like, no. The father could have pounded him. I mean, he could have just pounded him for this behavior. But instead he goes, hey, everything I have is mine. Everything that's mine is yours. Now, here's what he means by that. All of it is available to you, just like what it was for the younger brother, but you're so far away from my heart, just like what the younger brother was. See, if we don't get this, but hopefully we get this part, okay, if we forget everything else, but we get this part, this is the most critical. And this is the GPS for this morning. It's your good practical stuff, okay? Here it is. You can be in the Father's house, but far away from his heart. I know a lot of churchgoers, their attitudes, their unforgiveness, their bitterness, their resentment, their anger, their envy, their gossiping. It's ugly. It's gross. Father doesn't appreciate it. Guess what? They're in the, quote, Father's house. They go to church every Sunday. Man, even some of them have Sunday night church. They even go then, and they even go to prayer meeting on Wednesday night. Dutiful, right? These are the type of people we'd say, wow, they're the Christian of Christian. I'm going to tell you, as a pastor, I've been in those churches. I've seen what's behind the curtain, and it was ugly. Let someone try to serve in an area that they really want, and man, they'll cut them off. Let someone do something well, and they're like, well, they're not that great. Like, what? Why can't we celebrate this? This is weird behavior. See, what we always think of is this, the salacious sin is the one that God hates the most. No, he hates all of it. But I will tell you this, in my estimation, this is my opinion, I think it's easier for a prodigal to come home than a prideful person to come home. Because the prodigal knows the extent of their sin. The prideful person goes, nope, not me. I'm a great person. Look at all that I've done. Look at how good I've been. I not only tithe to my church, I gave to missionaries. Well, woo, woo, woo. I'm sure God gets this really tingly feeling inside when you walk by. You know, there's the guy that tithes and gives to missionaries. Can't wait for them to come to heaven with me with that attitude. And I really think, as I've watched Christians for years, those who have turned the prodigal, yeah, it's embarrassing and all those other things, no doubt about that. And what they did was not good. But I always feel like they're a whole lot easier to reach. And how do I know this? Because when you look at the people that Jesus reached and the people that would have nothing to do with him, the people that realized, man, I'm a long ways away. What about Peter, James, and John? They weren't that great. Jesus made them two wonderful disciples. What about Zacchaeus? All right? You've been in church, you know that Zacchaeus was a wee little man, right? You know that little thing if you were in children's church and that sort of stuff, okay? Zacchaeus, not a good guy. And he admitted it. How many Pharisees and religious rulers admitted it? Not many. We're going to talk next week about Nicodemus as it relates to the loving father, because that's where we get John 3 out of. Nicodemus was one of the few, and it even records in scripture that Nicodemus helped bury Jesus' body. Why weren't a whole lot of other people listed by name? Because there weren't many. You'd have gotten your name in there. Instead, or it would have said a lot of Pharisees. It doesn't say that. And I think the challenge that I want to give all of us is this. If you're like me, and you could admit it, you've played the role of the prodigal son, the younger brother, and you've played the role of the older brother. Neither one is the better sin, okay? Now, one may affect more and be seen more, but the other one is going to affect you and your family significantly. Bitterness is passed on. It's learned. They watch. Oh, that's how mom and dad deal with reactions and actions. This is what they do in response. That's how they learn. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hold a grudge because they weren't good to me. I'm not going to be good back. That's not a good attitude. That's the older brother. I really want to challenge all of us to understand this and embrace this, that sometimes we can be around the Father's house but be nowhere near the Father's heart. Because in the end, and as we discuss this next week, our goal is not to be the younger brother. Our goal is not to be the older brother. Our goal is to become like the Father. We're going to take communion here in just a minute. We'll pray a prayer and that sort of thing. And I'm going to invite anybody who's a follower of Christ, whether this is your first Sunday with us or not, or maybe this morning you've decided that you want to follow Christ, that you've heard through this message, you felt a stirring in your heart to say, this is what I've been waiting for. This sounds like what has been in my heart. I just couldn't quite put all the pieces together. And this would be a wonderful morning to take communion for the very first time as a new believer. So whether you're a regular attendee of this church or you go elsewhere, if you are a follower of Jesus, whether that happened this morning or 10 or 20 years ago, we want you to take part because it's His communion, not ours. And so what we do here is I'll ask everyone to bow their heads and close their eyes in just a minute, and then the instruments will begin to play and that sort of thing, and then you can just simply line up over here, take communion, and go back to your seat. Whenever you feel like you've done business with God, maybe you've had a little bit of older brother in you or a little bit of younger brother, or sometimes I've found in my life, surprisingly both, that I can change on a dime and become the younger brother and older brother in an instant, that maybe you need to do business with God and just confess this morning, because I want to give you the cure for the older brother syndrome, okay? Here's the cure. It's a discipline that we neglect. And if you get this one right, you're going to find out that you can get out of being the older brother really, really fast. It's called gratefulness. See, the older brother wasn't grateful. Do you notice what he called his brother? That son of yours. Not even my brother. That son of yours. Distance himself. He needed to be grateful. Maybe you just need to be grateful to God this morning and count some blessings that you've seen a lot of the bad stuff going on, but maybe you just need to take some time to be grateful. And as we approach communion, we need to have a heart of gratefulness for what Christ did on the cross for us. And that's going to erase a lot of the problem with the older brother. Let's everyone bow our heads and close our eyes. I don't know everyone's story or even what's lurking in your heart. But I can tell you that while the salacious sin, the wild living stuff's easy to point out and easy to see in someone else's life, it's easy to see when someone's falling away from God. That's an easy one. The problem sometimes are those who give the appearance that they come to church because they love God when they may just do it out of a duty. And maybe they just feel like they're just a slave to God. Maybe they just feel like God never comes and helps me. I work in the fields every day. He just never seems to be around, never says thank you. And maybe this morning you just need to repent, and in your heart of hearts, you need to ask God, the loving Father who loves you so very much, you just need to ask Him, Lord, make me grateful. Make me grateful for what I have, not what I don't have. Make me grateful where I don't see following you as some sort of slave task or hard labor. But yeah, that it's work, but it's a work that I enjoy. And so, Jesus, we come before you now and just examine our hearts. Let us know. Are we the younger brother that needs to come home? Or are we the older brother who needs to come home? Father, that we would know your heart. We wouldn't look at you as someone who's indifferent to us or doesn't care, but someone that we can hear whisper in our ear and in our heart, all I have is yours. And Lord, that we would reach out for it and not just stay outside the house pouting and not stay angry, but learn to rejoice when others return home. Learn to rejoice when others do well. So God, make us grateful. In Jesus' name.